You have just entered the Katie Ma Podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 303 of the KV Mod Podcast. It is December 3rd, 2017. Just getting in December here, and I'm joined by two lovely gentlemen, Katie Zen and Yingity Yang, tonight. How are you fellas doing?
Oh, Katie, I think you're muted. Katie has
muted his mic.
Already.
Well, an impressive start.
How I'm doing. Yeah, that pretty much explains how I've been doing. Just muting Twitch. One of the only times I've muted myself in the Twitch app instead of my actual Blue Yeti.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, maybe this will be better to go by. But no, I'm doing pretty well. Had a nice week. Work is going okay. It's mainly just dealing with, being a gallery guide, it's a pretty mundane job. But
is the gallery all decorated for Christmas now?
Not the gallery, but we do have the outside Christmas light show going on.
Okay.
So working majority of those shifts. But yeah, it's just, for how simple of a job it is, it's baffling to me how people still mess up what they're supposed to be doing. It is simply, and I'll go off on a huge tangent about this in case anyone doesn't have something more interesting they want to talk about, but I could rant. Woo! Anger. But no? All right. Cool. Well,
I was listening to you. I was being served tea, so I was muting my mic.
I see.
No, I feel like a place like a museum, I feel like that would be a fun place to work at in the Christmas season, because everyone's in a good mood. Like, I feel like the one time of year that it's probably a little bit of fun to work in the service industry or you know, a job like this where you're interacting with people all day is
right
during the holiday season. Because, like, everyone, well, not everyone, but, like, most people are in a good mood, you know?
Yo, yeah. There's nothing wrong with the people going there. It's the people I'm working with who just are. Oh, I had such a good Neanderthal. Not Neanderthals. It's some other comical word of old humans. But no, it's just dumb things like I'll be stationed in the lobby and someone will be like upstairs and they can't get the elevator for somebody. We have like an old school elevator that one of the guys has to be on. They're like, oh, guide 42, can you please get the elevator? I'm like, all right, fight the flow of traffic up there. And then I go up there and the guide is laughing it up with somebody and they're like, oh, they already went down the stairs. I'm like, okay, call that in next time, buddy. And then it's just so annoying. I go downstairs. So this is my post for at some point in the night, because they're like hour long shifts between what role you have to be in. I'm in the lobby. People are going through to the left of me, stand with the gift shop guy working the gift shop who I've met a handful of times. And then the right is the door of these two giant ass heavy doors that thankfully are wheelchair accessible by means of, you know, buttons. And so my job is, it's pretty mundane, just standing there, you know, thanking people having a good night, mainly just looking out for any bullshit. Unfortunately, I was caught right up in the bullshit with nothing to do about it. So, and like mainly just getting the door for people who are leaving. And the doors are so heavy and the button on the side only gets one of the doors. But luckily I discovered this invention hidden around the counter, this remote that has two buttons for each door. So I'm standing there holding the remote, feeling the power of God in my hands, getting the door for people as they leave. And it's just excellent. So I resume this task at night. And the guy to the left of me is a man I've never spoken with before. And he's, you know, doing his job. And it's a sold out event, 2,000 people there. So there's a lot of traffic going through. And I'm opening both the doors at once when there are a lot of people going. And this guy's getting pissed. He does not like the cold air coming in. He's like, yeah, I'd appreciate it if you only let him out through one door. I'm like, buddy, it's a sold out event, 2,000 people. If there's this much traffic and someone's going by a baby stroller, I'm like, yeah, look at that. I'm going to get both doors for him. And he's like, okay. Doesn't say anything. And this continues and then it's going on and on. And, there was something else, but mainly, I wasn't going to say. He wants me to like start funneling them through one door and like not letting the cold air get in. And then it gets to the point I'm supposed to rotate to the next position. But then the person going goes to the wrong place because it's like 15 minutes later and I'm not getting bumped for my post. Then it's like, oh, well, how about you just go ahead and stay there until the end of the night? Like, well, I'll do that. I'll begrudgingly do that. So I got to spend more time with this guy. someone comes by who is like a roamer throughout the event, seeing if anyone needs a break, and he offers me a break, and I take him up on that because I was getting a little bit of swamp ass at the time. That's
appreciate the vivid details here.
I just want to keep everyone, you know, in the know. But I get back to my post. The remote is nowhere to be found. Little dude has the remote behind the desk, and now in addition to handling sales with people, he has now taken it upon himself to get the door because he was convinced he would do a better job. And so I'm just standing there watching as he opens one door at a time and people struggle to get through him. And he looks at me and goes, this time I opened the door. I look at him, I'm like, I was so mad.
The mind games.
Yeah, he was such a power trip. I looked at him and I was like, you've taken my purpose. And he was laughing. God. That was funny. But I was just like, I stood there and every single time a lot of people are going through and he's handling sales and I look at the button, I'm just staring at him. I'm just looking at him like I could get the button, but it's like you hit the button to open the door on like the right for them to go through and they still open the one on the left anyways. You can't court these people. I don't know if that perhaps this man was inexperienced with working with people in a position as this, but you cannot court people like sheep. They are, anyways. So yeah, I mean, it was just a night full of minute stress, but things could be worse. I just think about my old job and all the bullshit dealing with there, and I'm pretty thankful. So
I was going to say next time I'm encountering like a hard problem at work, you know, or I'm sitting there racking my brain, I'm just going to think about this story and how at least I'm not down in the trenches with this guy trying to steal the remote for the front door.
With this little gimp trying to...
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so that's been the highlight of my week. That's, you know, how exciting it's been for
that
me.
That low-key museum drama.
Oh, yeah.
Real.
Oh, there have been, like, proposals going on, and that's always been fun. And the whole, like, event is pretty, like, exciting. So it's a fun place.
Well, I'm glad you're still enjoying your new job aside from this guy on the power trip here with the doors.
Oh my God, if I see him again, I'm fighting for that remote. I'm not dealing with it. I'm not dealing with this man.
Right, Ying, what have you been doing this week?
Oh, I unfortunately don't have any fascinating museum stories, nothing on the level.
Oh, come on.
No one coming up to you in your museum trying to take your door privileges?
No. I mean, my door privileges are pretty secure. So, you know, again, I'm going to have to think about this story. When I get the door from myself or someone else, I think, boy, I'm so happy I didn't have to fight for the privilege to do that. Now, what I've been doing is I've been taking care of my parents' dog. They're traveling abroad, so I presently have an English bulldog passed out underneath my desk. So if you happen to hear snoring in the middle of the podcast, it's like a tiny earthquake whenever she falls asleep. So I'll be honest, I didn't sleep all that well last night because the instant she passes out, there's like this gentle rumbling throughout the entire bed because I don't know what it is. It's she has this full body effort when she goes to sleep. Wow. I'm sure it's a health issue. It has to be. There's no way this kind of an animal is meant to create that much of a disturbance when it's sleeping.
The way you describe it, that doesn't sound normal.
No. But she's a sweetheart, so she's passed out right now. But just in case you hear, in case you think that, you know, the end is coming, it might just be my dog snoring.
If your ears just start vibrating from intense
Yeah, nosebleeds and, yeah, no. No, that's really all I've been doing. I just had, because they dropped off the dog, I had the opportunity to hang out with some family, some people that I haven't seen in quite a while, managed to get a couple more days off of work, so...
Nice.
Been relaxing for the most part, getting ready for the holiday season because we actually pick up in business a little bit.
Okay.
Nothing too interesting, just I have a dog now and I got to see some family.
Awesome. Cool.
That sounds sounds like a nice little easy going week here as we inch toward Christmas. I didn't do a whole lot this week, but I did go to a concert. Went to see Trivium and Arch Enemy. If anyone's metal fan out stuff. There, yeah. So that was awesome. It was at a really good venue. It's called Regency Ballroom here in San Francisco, and it's like basically pretty much everyone is general admission. So it's just like, you know, it's all just floor, open floor. which is really nice. You know, cause like everyone's got to stand up. No one's like sitting down in seats. You know, that's like it's not something you want to see at a rock show. So that was really nice. I had a lot of fun with that. And, yeah, other than that, you know, just kind of getting ready for Christmas, you know, you kind of get closer to it and, people starting to take some time off and all that. So,
okay.
That's pretty much all I've been doing. I did eat some good stuff this week, that I should mention. I did on Friday, me and some friends did an escape room here in San Francisco, ooh, which was really cool. Okay. We did one at the Palace of Fine Arts in San Francisco, which is actually, I think, is like a kind of well-known place for escape rooms. They have three of them and they're all really good. So we did that and that was super fun. And then afterward we went to this barbecue place, somewhere in San Francisco. And, you know, I've definitely had my fair share of barbecue being from Texas. So, so I walk in and I look at their menu and I'm like, oh, okay, you know, standard barbecue fare. Look up on the board. They're out of brisket, pork, and ribs. I was like, oh, wait a minute. That's everything. Like what do you have if you don't have these things? And so they also make like burgers and stuff. So I had a burger, which is actually pretty good. Had a burger and like a sausage link. They did have sausage, you know, but there wasn't a whole lot there. But they had a bunch of like beer and soda on draft, and they had a root beer on draft. And I don't drink a ton of soda these days, but I was like, yeah, give me that root beer on draft. And it was fantastic. I don't actually even know what brand it was, but basically anytime there's root beer on draft, just get it. Like you should just get that root beer. Because I've never had a bad root beer on draft.
Yeah, that's good, man. I had some ribs tonight. They tasted incredible. Nothing else really.
Oh, you actually had ribs tonight?
Yes, I did. Yeah. Homemade. Not homemade. Home prepared.
Were they beef ribs or pork ribs?
they were beef ribs.
Okay. I prefer pork, but beef ribs can be good if they're done the right way.
That's true. I mean, they were coming right off the bone, and why is this so funny? Yeah, they're just really tasty. It was some good food. But yeah. Hey Ying, what have you been eating, sir?
I managed to go to one of my favorite sushi restaurants in town.
Ooh.
Which it was a real treat because I had not had sushi in like 6 months or so. Managed to go with a bunch of coworkers. And I don't know, I never thought about this before, so I always used to go to these kinds of restaurants with friends from university, and we had it down, right? It's like one of those places where you sit down, you get one menu, a server comes by, and you sort of just have to read off to them what you want in like an all-you-can-eat style, right? So people are ordering for the entire table. I went with a bunch of coworkers, and I don't think they've done this kind of a thing before because just the ordering process with them was such an ordeal of them trying to figure out, like, yeah, who wants to eat what, and we got to make sure that everyone has the thing that they want. And I've never thought about it before that this, I guess, going to a restaurant like this very much benefits from having a regular group because it took us maybe 20 minutes to order, and our server had visited us like three times in that span of 20 minutes. But it's a very good restaurant. It's one of the few places that I think offers very, very fresh sushi. Like, of course, it has to be fresh to a degree, given that it's raw fish. But it's one of the places that's really hard to get into because they consistently have a line going outside of the building every single night. So it was like it felt like such an occasion. And then we get in there, and it takes us forever to order because this group of people I'm with doesn't really know how to deal with this kind of all you can eat. You can basically only sit there for an hour and a half because they're trying to turn the tables over so quickly. I feel like I need to go back with my regular group just because it's been so long since I've actually gone there and didn't have to feel stressed out about whether or not we were going to order anytime soon.
Yeah. Right.
But that's really all I've been eating in terms of being anything out of my ordinary diet was actually being able to go to this really nice sushi restaurant, because see, I really enjoy sushi, but I don't get a chance to go out and actually have it too often.
I was going to say, like, not having sushi for 6 months. I mean, I don't have it super often, but I probably have it maybe, like, I don't know, once a month, maybe.
Yeah, that's the goal.
Yeah.
Trying to up my sushi quota.
But I do know what you mean about, like, if you don't have a... If you have a group of people who's not really sure what they want, the amount of choice that you have at most sushi restaurants can be paralyzing. So unless you've been... Like, unless you kind of know what kind of sushi you like... It can take someone who's new to it a little while to figure out what they want off the menu.
Yeah, and this was like, we were a group of six, and we had maybe three or four of them had never been to this restaurant before. So never mind one person not being sure, well over half of our party was, as you said, paralyzed by choice and not quite sure how to handle this extensive menu in front of them.
Okay.
It's too much. Some people can't handle it that well. No, I mean, find that myself.
Yeah, Scott's been talked about that before. He's saying there's too much choice because it takes everyone too long to do anything now.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Like, especially like, I haven't been to Denny's enough to discover like my go-tos. Like, I know that country fried steak is good. I know we're going from a classy restaurant down to, you know, Denny's, but I'm still in that feeling around phase, and when I look at the menu, I'm like, I could get any of these skillets, which I know are good, but then there are like 20 different items that I want to try out. So, but like, not just for Denny's, just so many different like places. I have a tough time with menus also, so I kind of feel that struggle.
Yeah, that menu, I mean, the places that have a big menu, like Denny's, like Cheesecake Factory, you know, sushi places, like some Chinese places that have like hundreds of items on the menu.
Right.
Sometimes I like that, but a lot of times I would rather they cut it down. Like, is the chef really that good at these, like, 100 things? You know, give me a few options. Give me a few options that the cook is, like, really experienced with, you know, that are going to be really good.
There is, very close to that sushi restaurant that I went to, it's funny, like, they're neighbors, so this restaurant that's almost immediately beside the sushi restaurant is the exact, it's like the antithesis of this sushi restaurant, because the menu changes every day, but you don't get a choice as to what you order. Like, if you go and sit down at this restaurant, you are going to have the three items that are on the menu for a three-course meal.
Okay. I kind of like that.
And it's very expensive to go and do that, and it's, I don't know how I feel about that. Like, I understand the idea of there being too much choice, but to have no choice whatsoever, like you said, that's going to instill a lot of confidence in the chef that this is what is being made for this evening.
Yeah, I feel like that's sort of, at that point, you're sort of going because the experience is always different, and that's right. The appealing thing about it. But yeah, I don't know that I would, I wouldn't frequent a restaurant where I wasn't sure I was going to be able to get something I liked. You know, I don't like gambling when I'm going out to eat, especially if it's like a nicer place.
Yeah.
But definitely get what you know is good. Yeah. What's good about the sushi place near me is that when you get the all you can eat, you can just, you know, have the freedom to try anything. But then they have that policy where you have to finish what you order, or they'll charge you separately for that. So
yeah,
some pressure.
It's like a blessing and a curse, because you can sample a lot of things, but then you actually have to eat what you get.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Okay, well, cool. So, I'm glad we've all been doing well. What have we been playing this week? Anything of note to talk about?
Mm-hmm.
KD, why don't you go?
I'll start off. I've been playing some good stuff. I finished One Shot, which is a game that we gave away at LAN this year, actually. And I briefly talked about a bit last podcast, after only playing like the first hour of it, but that game really hooked me and is definitely like, of all the RPG Maker games I've played, which is not very many, it is definitely like my favorite, and has convinced me that RPG Maker games can be like up there with, you know, like legitimate games. Like, when I usually see RPG Maker games, it's, to be fair, a lot of them use the same default assets. One Shot does not. Everything is original. But I didn't have faith in the engine until now, but it can do some cool stuff. And, One Shot is just, is an amazing game. really, it's a meta game kind of. I think I said this. It's kind of like, you know, Undertale or like Doki Doki, mm-hmm. but it does some really cool stuff. I picked it up during the Steam sale. I think it was like $6. Really worth it. Really great game to play through. And, you get the added advantage of playing it now that the DLC has come out, which when the game launched, there's like a door that had a counter on top of it that was counting down to like April something, like a few months after the game launched. But that is like essential content for the game. So now it's, if you pick it up, you'll get to play it all the way through. But yeah, that game is awesome. And that the ending of that game is one of my favorite endings in a game, like the 100% ending. It's just a very effective ending. But, I will say one thing that's could almost be considered a spoiler, but, I'll try my best not to. It's basically like if, let me see. In Undertale, at the end of the game, there's a certain choice where ultimately it doesn't make a huge difference, but there's just a little bit more content you get if, like you pick a certain choice. If you guys know what I'm talking about, it's the very end of a certain route and you pick the option on, you know, the left or was it the right? The option that says do not. Mm-hmm. You get a little more bang for your buck with that choice. If you're thinking about playing one shot, I'm going to say is pick the one on the left. You're not going to miss anything out. You're going to have a better experience overall. And to explain why would be to spoil. So I'm just going to say pick the one on the left. But
okay. Ominous.
Yeah. Being very cryptic.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's tricky to talk about stuff like this without spoiling it.
I know. I don't want you to spoil for people, but I like how you just you're like spoiling, but not really. You're like just do
you know
this
that
one.
Feels like that feels like we just read one of the Bloodstains in Dark Souls.
Oh yeah,
the one
yeah.
on the left, and you're like, what? I don't understand.
Okay. Be wary of falling rock or something like that.
Yeah.
No, I mean
secret door ahead, and it's just something that kills you.
Right. Yeah, I hope I didn't spoil too much, but I mean, if you're a naughty listener, you can bounce over this, you know.
listener? Is that what you just said?
An audio listener. A naughty listener? Well, that sounds like something that I would say.
Naughty
you're
listener.
A naughty, naughty listener.
Right all of our this. Listeners are naughty. But, yeah, that was a really great game. Loved it. And other than that, let me see. I played, you know, the usuals. Battle Right, you know, okay. Sonic Generations played a bit more of that. I started Hellblade Senua's Sacrifice, which is another one I got on sale, and I only got like an hour in that before I was about to die of exhaustion, but I plan on finishing that before the next cast, so hopefully talk about that. But mainly I finished and put a lot of time in my second playthrough of Evil Within 2, which, yeah, the first playthrough is on survival, which is like normal mode. Now I'm going through it on hard mode. And, that game, I posted a Steam review of that because I kind of have some mixed feelings on it. Overall, I'd probably give it like a 6 out of 10 because the game is broken. There are just things in the game that it's completely buggy throughout. Like mantling objects is just an insurmountable task for this game sometimes. Like, just moving, you'll launch 3 feet, then do the climb down animation. Just little stuff like that. And just generally little bugs and quirks throughout, which don't really distract from, like, the experience, but it's a little buggy here and there. But what I really mean when I say it's broken is, like, there are certain abilities and spells, or not spells, fuck am I saying, like, weapons that you upgrade that outright, like, trash some encounters. For example, like, my first playthrough, I'd been conditioned by Resident Evil 4. So, you know, I upgraded like the handgun and the shotgun and, you know, I was happy with that. But, in the second playthrough, I was like upgrading some other stuff to see like if they're just to see like what they would be like, you know, like the gas bolts or something, like the gas grenades. It's like in Resident Evil 4, you get the mind thrower. You remember the mind thrower? No, you don't. Not because either of you have played RE4, but because the mind thrower is just a unimpressive, you know, weapon. And so you have like the crossbow in Evil Within 2. So I was upgrading the different kinds of bolts, and there is the gas grenade bolt. There is an upgrade for that where normally you shoot it, big puff of smoke, and enemies inside will lose aggro of you. So it's a good escape tool. Upgrades for it will increase the radius of the smoke and make it last for up to 15 seconds. There is one upgrade that makes it so that you can sneak kill every enemy inside of the smoke. Which, normally when you sneak kill, you have to, you know, like, crouch up really slowly from behind them, you know, how you would assume sneak killing would go, and then, you know, get them that way. But when they're in the cloud of smoke, you just walk up to them, press F, and Sebastian will do, like, a really quick animation as opposed to the slow one, and just, like, do a quick cut and insta-kill them. So when you have, like, six mobs rushing at you, you just fire a smoke bolt, and then just mash F, and the encounter is done. That's insane.
Very realistic.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. There's also one where there's an upgrade you get very early on called Ambush, where you can sneak kill people from around corners, where, you know, normally you have to go from behind, press F. You can be like, if the game becomes, see an enemy, shoot them once to aggro them, run 3 feet away around the wall. They've then lost sight of where you are. They'll run in that direction, and then you mash F and insta-kill them from around the corner. Sometimes, this has happened multiple times, but there'll be like a trail of three enemies rushing around this corner. I'm just mashing F, turn around, insta-kill, go back. The other guys are still like, oh, where is he? Where do you go? And you just insta-kill all three of them. It's just, which is, I think about this, and it's a good and a bad thing. You know, it's bad in that, you know, it's obviously overpowered. But it's a good thing in that it feels incredible to do this. It just feels, it's hilarious and, you know, it's a lot of fun. But overall, there are just too many things in the game that are lacking. It's not really too original. The story sucks. Like, there's really no extravagant way to detail it, but the story is just not good or interesting. The voice acting's bad. Although I will say the last, like, three chapters of the game, the game really jumps up in quality and kind of becomes worth all the mediocrity, I would say. But overall, there is a legitimate fun factor to the game because, you know, I'm really in love with, like, RE4 and Dead Space, and it captures that feeling about as well as the first Evil Within did. So it's pretty satisfying. I'm currently, you know, doing my second playthrough on the harder difficulty because the reward for that is, well, so in the game, you can melee people, and you can also find, like, hatchets that will, like, replace your melee weapon, and they insta-kill, but you can only use them once. Beat the game on the hardest difficulty, second hardest difficulty, you get the brass knuckles, which are basically an infinite use hatchet. So you just, you become One Punch Man, and that sounds very fun. So it's become a pretty fun game to just kind of mute it, have a stream going in the background, have a podcast going. And when you're skipping all of the dialogue and cutscenes, it becomes a much more enjoyable game. So
I was going to say, I feel like you're playing it a lot for having given it a 6 out of 10.
Yeah, yeah, I was surprised. I was like, in the review, I went over so many negatives, and I'm like, why do I have 30 hours played in this game? It's because there is definitely a legitimate fun factor, like, through everything. And, like, another thing, too, it's, I talked a little bit how about it's... Is there a dog barking? The fuck? I think... I don't know what that was. But, in the first Evil Within, it was kind of like Resident Evil 4 or 5, where it's just point A to point B. In Evil Within 2, by the third level, you're in a very open area where you have a lot of different ways to tackle situations. Like, you can either get the crossbow, you can get the shotgun, you can explore all of these houses, or you can go to the obvious way you're supposed to go. So I can really appreciate all that flexibility in design, even though at first I was like, this is different, I don't like it. But, you know, it's still a fun game. I wouldn't say it's worth 60. I'd probably pick it up on sale at like 30, maybe 40 if you really like the first game. But overall, Evil Within 2, definitely more of the same, and I was pretty happy with it. But yeah, continue playing it. I see that I have one friend who owns Evil Within 2, and that would be Meme Friend. So, yeah.
Classic Meme Friend.
Yeah. I'll be curious to, because that's another thing, the game kind of doesn't run too well. Like, on a 970, it's around a 40-50 FPS on max settings, which there's no difference between max and low settings. Like, it looks better, but there's no difference in quality aside from taking the motion blur off. And, like, the frame rate is fine, but it constantly dips and stutters. So I'd be curious to see how John's fucking incredible computer could handle this game.
Yeah.
So.
Okay.
But yeah, that's pretty much been my week, other than, you know, playing the new Pokemon whenever I get the chance.
All right. What about you, Ying?
This week I made one of the better decisions regarding my Steam account, and it was selling all of my PUBG items, getting about $50
nice
for all those items, and buying Wolfenstein 2, the new Colossus.
Nice. Okay.
Awesome.
That is a string of good decisions.
Which was also on sale for the holiday Steam sale, and so I managed to pick that up at about, I think it was on for half price. So I've been playing that for the past couple of days. I only finished it this morning. And I was concerned because if you go onto Steam, the reviews are still mixed, which was contrary to what I had heard about the game for the most part. I heard that the story was quite good. I heard that the combat was very fulfilling. So I was surprised to see that it had mixed reviews, and it seems to be mostly linked to launch kinks, where the game was not performing very well at launch. There were some crashing issues. So if you do happen to go onto Steam and look at Steam reviews, I can safely say that the negative reviews, while they were valid at the time, no longer reflect the game accurately in its current state. The game runs quite well on my rig. And I run a 4770 i7 CPU and then a GTX 970. So it's nothing too crazy by today's standards. My stuff's starting to get a little bit outdated. But it ran perfectly fine. Never really dropped below 60 frames, running on mostly medium settings. And as for the game itself, as I said, I finished it early this morning, and it took me 11 hours to do so in total. So it's about an 11-hour story. There is some endgame content to it if you do feel like going back and playing the Wolfenstein, you know, shooty mechanic of dual wielding auto rifles and you know, just nonsense. So there is more time to be had in this game than just 11 hours. But as far as the story goes, which I think most people are interested in, it's more of the same in a good way. My concern was how are they going to ramp it up from the New Order? And I would say that they did a pretty good job. They certainly put you right back into the, that alternate history dystopian sort of setting, pretty well. And there's a couple of things that happened throughout the game that I think were concerted efforts to try to make the player feel like maybe the New Order was tame in comparison. So some of the pivotal story points, some of the things that happened throughout the narrative are just classic Wolfenstein crazy nonsense that, you know, you're suspending your disbelief because the action is so well done. Mm-hmm. And you just want to enjoy the experience. So I don't want to spoil one bit of it because seeing these things happen for the first time is where Wolfenstein is really going to be worth it to you. So I would just say that, you know, ignore the negative Steam reviews for now because they were mostly launch issues. If you enjoy the New Order, you'll enjoy the new Colossus. The story is just the same batshit nonsense of just crazy E.J. Blazkowicz killing Nazis and, you know, everything you think of with Wolfenstein. Very much enjoyed it. I would recommend picking it up if you have the chance and you enjoyed the New Order. That's really the only new game I'm playing. I went back and played Cities Skylines a little bit just earlier today on stream, managing to peel myself away from Destiny 2 because the content is now finally at a point where it's stale for me. There's no real reason to log back on, which is good timing, at least for me as a PC player, because the...
I said just in time for the next DLC.
Exactly. Just in time for all of my work to mean nothing, where they're going to be reintroducing all these system changes and new DLC, but I'm sure we'll be talking about that just a little bit later. But Wolfenstein is basically the biggest thing I've been playing. Definitely recommend picking it up if you do have the chance.
Okay, yeah, okay. We'll be talking about some Destiny 2 a little bit later on. But yeah, I'll go real quick, because I've been playing almost nothing. I wanted to get back into Wolfenstein this week, but I just didn't get a chance to. So I'm excited to finish it because I want to like be able to talk with you about it, Ying. Probably not on the cast because we don't want to spoil anything, but yeah, I'm glad you liked it, cause I've been liking it so far. I need to find the time to, you know, to finish that 11 hour campaign. So very little going on for me in the gaming world, but hopefully I'll get some chance to play things this week. So let's hop into some news. There's not a lot of news because we're we're kind of in, you know, into December, so games kind of slow down a little bit. But there's not nothing. I think the first big news that I want to talk about this week is just that Extra Life hit a pretty big milestone over the past week. They hit $10 million raised this year.
So good.
That's the first time they've hit $10 million in a single year. And
that was just awesome.
Yeah, so I'm just really, really happy for them, really excited, and just wanted to take a minute to, you know, thank everyone who donated when we did our Extra Life marathon. You know, thank you to everyone who's donated to, you know, someone else doing their marathon. It's pretty amazing to see Extra Life continue to grow. And I mean, $10 million in 1 year is just, that's a lot of money, for children's hospitals. So really exciting. And the year's not even over. So like they're going to smash their previous, yearly record because there's still, what, 27, 28 days left in the year. So super exciting stuff. Really happy for them. Give them, you know, give them a congrats on Twitter. And keep, you know, keep donating for the rest of this year. Let's smash that 10 million milestone, maybe get to 11. So that's real quick Extra Life news. This one is, you know, in the ongoing saga, I feel like for a while it was all PUBG news, and now we can't go a week without more Battlefront 2 news. But this one's, you know, I think maybe a little bit of redemption, for everyone on Reddit.
Yeah, you can say that for sure.
Yeah, basically, you know, a lot of times when stuff happens in games or people boycott a game, you know, someone will tweet pictures of the stock price and be like, yep, it's, you know, doesn't actually matter. Well, you know, I don't know if we can link all of these things together, but I think there's definitely a chance that, that EA's stock price was kind of related to this. So EA's stock price, took a hit. They lost, what was it? $3 billion of value recently. Yeah. So, you know, that's definitely not nothing.
That's a reasonable amount of money.
Yeah, shedding $3 billion is not a small amount for a company like EA.
No.
But yeah, you know, it's like I think when this the kind of loot box stuff went mainstream and you start like when it starts to kind of hit the financial news, that's when it could be, you know, really, when it can have a negative effect. And, you know, and so basically, I think just the whole outcome of this microtransaction stuff, and, you know, we've talked about that ad nauseum, but it did have a real effect, at least temporarily, on EA's stock price. Now, granted, they're still up for the year, you know, quite handsomely. But obviously, like, the one way that these things change is if stock prices go down, you know, if people think that, you know, that they're not going to be able to make money. I think you added this, Yang. Is there anything else to this story that you found interesting?
Yeah. I mean, you touched on one of the bigger things, and it's something that is making gamers upset now translating into making investors upset, which is maybe the biggest and scariest thing that can happen for EA, on top of the fact that apparently they may already also be on Disney's shit list because of the same issue. But what I thought was interesting that came from this discussion is that now you have financial analysis being done from essentially financial media. We're not really looking at this from a gaming perspective. And I thought it opened up a couple of interesting perspectives because obviously, EA and microtransactions are nothing new, but what I hadn't considered before was that the way they have to tackle microtransactions for something like Battlefront is going to be quite different from any other game. One analyst points to EA unable to mimic something along the lines of the Overwatch cosmetic market, where your loot boxes are essentially giving you purely cosmetic items, which I think most of us agree whenever we get asked, you know, what is acceptable for a loot box? Well, we say cosmetic items, you know, something that doesn't affect gameplay. What I hadn't considered was that EA would not be able to pursue that kind of a cosmetic market because altering things like the way that Stormtroopers look, the way that Darth Vader looks, may actually be violating the license that they have from Disney regarding Star Wars. And so now they have to work around an entirely new framework to figure out how do they keep these microtransactions in the game to keep investors happy while also not violating their license with Disney. And evidently they decided on locking certain weapon progressions behind gameplay time and, you know, well, all the stuff that we've talked about ad nauseum previously. And what I thought was interesting that was coming out of this is EA now has to look at an entirely new spectrum of trying to balance playtime versus different types of progression. And, you know, how do you work around microtransactions versus, I think somewhere in the article, they balance it out in the words of some people have more time than money and other people have more money than time. And how do you bring those two audiences to an equal playing ground? So what I was hoping to get out of this article was, from your guys' perspective, given that EA would not be able to pursue microtransactions in a sheerly cosmetic fashion, given Disney's licensing, what would be an appropriate way for them to reintroduce microtransactions the way that they plan to later in 2018?
I think it's a good question. I think you're definitely right that the Star Wars universe is so well-defined that it's hard to, you know, they don't want to violate that idea. The example that they gave was like, you don't want a pink colored Darth Vader because it's, you know, that takes you out of the idea of what the Star Wars universe is. And you know, they're not nearly as playful with the Star Wars IP as you can be in something like Overwatch, where, you know, they have Hawaiian outfits and, you know, just like all sorts of crazy stuff. I that's a great question. I don't know the answer to that. And I think that's maybe why they missed the mark, because cosmetics sort of define, I think, the really good, or the best loot box systems we've seen. You look at Overwatch, I think Overwatch is a good example. You know, I think League of Legends is a decent example. Like, there are a ton of skins, you know, and when you play League, like, there really is not that big of a push to pay into the system. It really comes from, you know, watching pro play and seeing the really cool skins, you know, the legendary skins and stuff. And so they sort of make you want to buy in based on some of that, like, peer pressure. You know, you don't want to be the noob that has no skins. And so, like, this idea, I mean, you look at CSGO. CSGO has weapon skins, and that's, like, a pretty serious game, or used to be. But now, I mean, like, you know, you have Dragon Lore Ops. You've got, like, crazy-looking weapons. I think honestly, every game has to get outside of their comfort zone in order to have those microtransactions, because it has to be cosmetic. And I think that's like something where they should have had a stronger voice, maybe to the, you know, to Disney or to, you know, to Lucas, whoever they were working with, to say, look, guys, we want to do right by Star Wars, but also, like, we have to get a little bit playful to get people to spend money on this stuff in a way that doesn't alter gameplay. And because they couldn't find that balance, you know, they put out a system that was just garbage. So I don't know. KD, do you have any bright ideas for how they could have avoided the tragedy?
CEO over here. So are you asking, like, what kind of microtransactions that EA should do going forward, like, compared to what they're doing now? Like,
how can they use microtransactions in the Battlefront game when they're not, you know, when, if they were restricted to doing some of those crazy cosmetic things that we normally expect a game to do?
Yeah, it's a tricky question, because, I mean, normally my instinct answer is don't do any microtransactions, but that's not fucking fool ourselves. EA is gonna, you know, do a microtransaction, because, you know, you can't exactly, like, make it separate content, because Battlefront 1 got enough shit being the way that game was.
I was gonna say, they drew a line in the sand to say that, like, all the campaign and everything wouldn't be DLC. But, like, they already cut off that option from themselves.
Right. Yeah, it's tricky. I mean, I personally don't think that, I mean, talking about Vader in a pink suit is a very wild example. Like, I definitely think it's possible to make interesting cosmetic designs without, you know, betraying the kind of feel of the game. Like, I haven't really seen what Call of Duty World War II, what they've done for cosmetics, but I'm sure they'll, you know, they have some skins you can get that kind of fit the tone of the game, and I think that's possible even more so in a sci-fi setting. You know, it doesn't have to be the fucking unicorn helmet for Darth Maul, you know?
Yeah. So, I mean, Call of Duty, I think, would be the perfect example of a game that can follow that Overwatch model, and you yourself have seen it when I was watching you stream Black Ops 2. And what is happening in that game at the end screen where you have a guy who has, like, his entire camo is in flames. He has a gun that's covered in weed leaves. Yep. And then his end animation, his win animation, while he's staying at the final screen, is dabbing furiously in the background.
Yep. I just remember vividly.
Now, take that kind of an action that surely sold all kinds of loot boxes for them. And imagine transplanting that into the Star Wars universe. Like, I don't take Star Wars all that seriously, and I think that would be hilarious, but from a perspective of Disney that's writing this kind of a license where they need to maintain Star Wars looking a certain way, there's a very strict preconceived notion of what these characters look like and how they behave. Like, that's the difference here, and it's I almost feel like I'm playing devil's advocate for EA, because when I ask that question is, how do you introduce microtransactions when you have so little flexibility with cosmetics? It's kind of a difficult situation, right? Like, that's something that's really difficult to balance between investors who are expecting a certain amount to come from microtransactions and Disney, who's saying, no, you cannot have this kind of a visual for our characters. So where do you sneak those in somewhere to make both people happy? Evidently, they couldn't pull that off, and I think that's maybe where this whole situation came from. But
you know what, though? That's why I think that actually, as I think about it more, your example with Call of Duty, I think, is exactly the right notion they should have taken, which is you can't mess around much with Star Wars in, like, the movies and the action figures and all these other aspects of the IP. But one place that you can get playful is in the video game. And I think that, like, sure, don't have a weed leaf skin in Battlefront 2, right? That's like, wouldn't fit the audience. But
shouldn't
I think,
have a Snoop Dogg voice pack in Battlefront 2.
Yeah, but I think, like, they actually, I think, you know what? I'm sort of taking a 180 here. I actually think that, sure, maybe the pink Darth Vader is, like, a mildly extreme example. But even that, like, I think where else would you be able to do that experimentation? Because you wouldn't ever be able to do it in any of their other properties. Like, the video game is where maybe you could take some of those liberties. And if you have these revenue targets you have to hit, I think if you're EA, you have to basically say, look, we've got to be able to have some freedom here. And if we don't have that freedom, you've got to adjust our goals down, because we're not going to be able to do it. And what they did instead was they rolled out a bad system instead of getting more creative with the cosmetics. But, like, Star Wars is such a rich IP that even if they weren't able to do the pink Darth Vader example, there's so many. I mean, you can have different color lightsabers. You can have different color, like, phaser bolts.
Palette swaps for characters.
Yeah, you can have, you can have, like, the Luke's, you know, Luke Skywalker, like, Tatooine skin where he's in, like, you know, he's in the jacket and stuff. You can have, like, there are so many examples of different types of skins and, you know, the different environments. You can have you can have, like, black stormtrooper armor, white stormtrooper armor. I think there is probably enough that they could have, they didn't even have to go crazy to have a reasonable number of cosmetic options that would make people want to spend money.
Exactly. Like, talking about the other costumes from the other, you know, other iterations of costumes, like, that's not only hitting on, you know, coolness, but that's hitting on nostalgia also. And that is huge. Yeah. Like, that's a no-brainer.
Yeah. But, so I think, I think you're exactly right, Ying, that it looks like they were put in a tough spot based on having to stick to, like, you know, being somewhat cautious, with regard to how the game reflected on the Star Wars, you know, canon. But you know what? This is, like, the marquee Star Wars game. I think you've seen it with Call of Duty. You've seen it with other games. I think you have to get a little bit playful. You have to get a little bit creative. If you want to have a successful, you know, microtransaction scheme, they're the only examples we've really seen where it's worked are the games that do that, that they go outside of their comfort zone. And even if you want to be a super serious game, like, I imagine if we saw a Call of Duty movie, that movie wouldn't have any crazy skins or anything in it, right? It would be, it'd probably be serious, you know? The campaign in Call of Duty is, like, pretty serious, pretty sincere, or at least tries to be most of the time. But then you get into multiplayer, you get into microtransactions, you've gotta make it a little bit playful, right? That's not the, multiplayer is not the place for everything to be strictly canon. And I think that's where they miss the mark.
Okay.
Definitely.
Yeah, I can understand it. And then so the answer, I guess, at the end of the day for the question that we posed would be they have to exhaust the existing franchise for all of those possible customization options first, like when we talk about different Luke Skywalker skins and things like that. But at the end of the day, maybe it's that this is assuming a lot of the internal conversation, but we'd have to assume that EA would need to push for more flexibility in the things that they can do with Disney's product in order to create a successful multiplayer. I can see that.
Yeah. And you know, there are just so many different things in the game, right? You have like air vehicles, you've got the special characters, you've got your normal character. Like there's so many little knobs you could turn where, I mean, look at Rocket League as an example here. Rocket League, you can customize the trails on your car, the wheels, the car body, the animation when you score a goal. Like that game when it came out was so basic, and you wouldn't have thought like you can make some really crazy customizations to what is a really simple like car hits a ball type game. But they found a way to do it. And Star Wars has so many more aspects that like I think it really is just they just didn't get creative enough with it. They took kind of an easy way out, and it shows. But we'll see. We'll see. I mean, it doesn't sound like the fan base that was up in arms on Reddit has a whole lot of faith in them re-implementing this microtransaction stuff in a smart way.
Yeah. I mean, they mentioned it at the very end of this financial article, but now that we've had this conversation, I have a very bleak outlook on that too, because it made it sound like EA is evaluating, they're still evaluating locking actual progression mechanics behind loot boxes, but they're just trying to do a better job of balancing the time that it requires to actually play and earn those items versus just buying them straight up from a loot box or trying to get them from a loot box. So yeah, maybe you're right. They didn't get creative enough, but this financial article makes it sound like they might not get creative, but you know, fingers crossed, maybe they'll, I'm just going to end it there. Maybe.
Maybe.
I can't think of anything more cold and like heartless in the games industry than giving an acronym to the word microtransaction. That's apparently a thing now. MTX.
MTX.
They're referring to it as MTX. And so, like, there's a quote from, I think it's from EA's CFO, maybe? He says, "We're not giving up on the notion of MTX. We're really watching how people are playing the game. We're trying to understand, are there certain modes where MTX may be more interesting than not?"
Stop that!
What an insightful comment, filled with substance. But wow, MTX, that is the future.
That just sounds gross. That sounds wrong. MTX, like they're trying to make it cool and trendy.
Yeah, I know. No. I know. This
like I'm about to watch an extreme sport.
Oh.
You add an X to something and all of a sudden, man, extreme.
Microtransactions. Extreme. Extreme.
Microtransactions, AXION. Microtransaction. I hate that story. We're moving on to some quick hits here. Guillermo del Toro confirmed for the Game Awards. Katie, I assume you added this because you're looking for that Death Stranding announcement.
Oh, baby. You know it. Every waking moment, waiting for another announcement, a trailer, a screenshot, following Kojima's Twitter. But no, so Guillermo del Toro was confirmed to be presenting an award at the Game Awards. And this isn't really huge news, but just some skepticism. The Game Awards is coming up pretty soon. It's this Thursday. And, I mean, I'm definitely going to disagree, you know, with, you know, what the awards go to, like what games the awards go to. It ultimately doesn't matter. What I really care about is like the game announcements and the drama that goes down. Like I remember, a couple of years ago with the whole Kojima stuff going on, that was lovely to watch when, Jeff Keighley said that he couldn't make it because of the lawyers and the whole crowd just boos, which apparently the booing started from Cliffy B. Just some cool trivia. But anyways, so yeah, looking forward to that, and hopefully we'll have a Death Stranding announcement given how close Kojima is with Jeff Keighley, who heads this event. And yeah, so Del Toro being there only makes me happier.
And now, so, they seem like BFFs, so hopefully we'll get some good announcements regarding that stuff.
Well, you want to talk about Kojima being BFFs. There are pictures on his Twitter of him with Mads Mikkelsen of oh my god. Taking him out to five-star dinners, giving him ancient, like, chapstick presents, like, engraved with his name on them. Like, I'm doing it an injustice, but I'm like, how does Kojima treat his wife if Mads Mikkelsen is getting, like, the king treatment? Like, it was crazy.
I'm sure he's a sensual lover.
Kojima, okay, I'm not gonna talk about how Kojima treats his wife. That's just so fun. So more Game Awards news. Apparently PUBG, their desert map is going to debut gameplay at the Game Awards. I'm not sure what facet it's going to be debuted in. I don't know if we're getting a trailer or if there's going to be like live gameplay going on. They did say, you know, we don't know what it's going to be, but hopefully, the map is getting closer to release. So they're going to be showing off gameplay. So yeah, hopes are high. I mean, I'm not personally too enamored by PUBG anymore, but more maps for that game is always a good thing.
Hopefully they'll talk about more than just the desert map. I feel like, you know, like this has been known for a while. So just talking about the desert map, like we've seen screenshots, you know, gameplay, that's cool. But, I think that hopefully they have something else to talk about when they're at the Game Awards. Cause I think just showing gameplay of the desert map, at least for me, that feels a little bit underwhelming, you know, compared to what some of the other announcements might be, you know, like we just talked about, maybe Death Stranding announcement. Like just talking about the desert map in PUBG feels like pretty small potatoes by comparison.
Right. Yeah, Ying brought up something in chat from, I'm not sure if it was Joel McHale or it probably was him from that one terrible year, but it was a quote from, I'm here to present. Oh, yeah, it was 2017. Yeah. Oh, wait, no. Yeah, it was, okay. Okay, yeah, it's 2016. Here to present the award for the racing category. A category where we get to compare quirky party games like Mario Kart to competitive racing sims like Forza. This is a great category, guys. Let's just keep it how it is. And that was just
so
such a good
part.
Yeah, there is some more good drama when 2015, when the year Metal Gear Solid 5 came out, and Snake's voice actor had been changed to like Keither Sutherland after David Hayter did it all these years, and the one was representing award for best voice actor, and was like, there's nothing better than identifying a voice with a person like David Hayter to Solid Snake, and you just hear the crowd go ooh. It was just like, damn girl, calm down. But yeah, so I mean, I'm just hoping for more shit like that. It could be a dumpster fire and I'd still be happy.
Yeah, but, it's nice to throw in in December when things are kind of slow. Like,
right.
It's always fun to watch, and the reasons for it being fun are often different year to year.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm definitely not in for their having PUBG nominated for Game of the Year. That's quite a choice.
Well, speaking of you know, a game that won't be nominated for Game of the Year, but will hope is apparently leaving early access in 2018, DayZ.
Finally!
You heard right. DayZ apparently going to leave early access in 2018, only a full 2 decades after it originally came out.
Oh my god. When did this game release? I need to look it up now because I guarantee you there's an article from like 2014 saying DayZ scheduled to release 2015.
Yeah, I feel like we've definitely been, you know, there's definitely been talk of DayZ, you know, getting a big patch here and there or leaving early access. Like, I feel like it is just it is almost a parody of itself now.
It came out in 2013.
Yeah, well, that was standalone. The mod has been around forever. I was joking, but the mod's been around since like 2009. So it's
that's right.
It's amazing.
Oh my god!
It's only been standalone for 2013. But like, if you remember, people were playing the mod for a long time.
Oh okay, yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
So
it's just at this point, I'm like, who cares, man? Like, I'm looking at I'm on the store page. It's sitting at mixed reviews for a reason and all. The intro paragraph is just all caps, warning, this game is early access alpha. Do not purchase it unless you want to support development and prepare to handle with serious issues with the game. I'm like, are you trying to sell your game or have people not buy it?
Well, like, I think DayZ is like one of the reasons early access even exists, I feel like.
Yeah, because of that shit show, yeah.
But still feel like DayZ is one of those, it's a game that really, the experience hasn't been replicated.
That's true.
Because I think the Battle Royale games, I feel like, have taken some inspiration from pieces of DayZ. But this idea of, like, being able to hoard supplies, and, like, when you log in, you're kind of, like, hunting, you know, you're hunting others and trying to continue garnering supplies. Like,
right.
None of these other games have that persistent aspect, which I feel like was one of the most interesting things about DayZ. Now, granted, it all fell apart because you would crash, you know, or like die for some technical bug reason.
Mm-hmm.
But the core there, I think, was really, really exciting. Like, you managed to finally get a gun. And
yes.
And then you're super cautious when you're walking around, you know, because you know that other people have, you know, high-powered weapons. Like, I think that level of suspense, PUBG has kind of gotten close to it, but DayZ has a level of suspense that I think no other game has paralleled. But it was always marred by technical issues. So
mm-hmm.
I'm excited for it to become a real bona fide game. I just don't, like, I don't know that people will come back. I think it's very hard to regain some of that fire that they've had, you know, back when it released as standalone. 4 years is a long time to wait. Well, 5 years by the time it comes out. That's a long time to wait for, you know, for a game like this. I think a lot of people have probably just moved on.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I was saying this pre-cast, and you worded it quite well, but it is a very unique experience, what DayZ has been trying to present. Although I don't have high hopes, and I love to be skeptical about it and laugh at the idea of, you know, DayZ finally coming out of early access in 2018, I actually think it would be fantastic if that game came out of early access and it was polished and fun, and because you're right, it's a unique experience, and I could actually see it being a lot of fun if you got a group of people together, or even if you just wanted to have that persistent character trying to survive in, you know, the vast map that DayZ originally offered. But my only experience with DayZ was when I do have it in my Steam library, and I bought it early access, of course, and my persistent experience has been clipping underneath a staircase and then starving to death.
Yeah, I feel like that's the piece where they have such a reputation to overcome that I think if they do release out of early access and all of it works flawlessly, then, you know, I think they do have a chance, as good a chance as any game does, to really regain that momentum and start kind of coming back into the zeitgeist, into the current, you know, tastes of gamers. But I just don't know. Like, I don't know if they'll be able to shake off that reputation they've always had.
Not for sure.
Especially because it's been so long. I mean, 5 years. Like, it's amazing to me that it's taken them that long. But if it is anything less than pretty much technical perfection, I think people will just absolutely cast it to the side and continue playing, you know, the other games that they've already moved on to in that course of 5 years.
Yep.
Right.
But anyway, if you've been sticking around, man, waiting for it, your time is about
it's
to come.
Finally there. Your time is I mean, about I checked Steam charts and it's sitting at a good 1,000 players. Like it peaked at 4,000. So I mean, there are definitely people still dedicated to playing this, but I don't know. I mean, I don't know if it'll be enough to be worth.
Some people will come back when it leaves early access, but I think they will have exactly one shot. Right, they will probably. Yes. You will maybe get one shot right. from streamers on Twitch playing the game or something. Like you're going to have one chance that people will come back and because of the because of the game it is, because everyone knows what DayZ is. You'll get one chance to maybe get them back, and if anything goes wrong, it'll be back at 1,000 players, and that's like the best they can hope for long term.
It's definitely well known, so there's a good chance for people to. But I mean, it's right now it's $35.
And a lot of people already own it, though. That's the thing. Like a lot of people already have it in their library. So I don't know that it will necessarily start off giving them a ton of sales, but they can hope that the player base grows and then people start bringing their friends in who haven't bought it yet.
Right. Yeah. Hopefully they won't pull like an arc or anything where they raise it to 60 or something.
I mean, God knows DayZ has sold enough copies over its lifetime, to fund its development for a long time.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. You're right. Yeah. I'm looking at it now. Oh, my God. 150,000 reviews.
DayZ has made some people rich. That's for sure.
Wow.
Finishing up with the quick hits, we've got some Destiny 2 kind of rapid fire hits because there's been so many different Destiny 2 things going on. But Ying, stop me if any of this is of interest to talk about. We talked about the thing last week where Bungie had basically been kind of deceiving people with this like XP throttling system. So they said they were going to stop that immediately, but then they changed it to where now it requires twice as much XP to earn levels. So I think people would have been okay if the game had just come out and this had been the system from the start where the XP grind was a little bit longer, but no one felt deceived. It was like when you see your progress going up, that's real progress. You know how long it's taking. But I feel like that's not great news when you just got kind of caught deceiving people about how much XP they were earning. And then you decide to just double it.
I mean, yes, this doesn't bode well, not in the sense that people really need to level up after level 20, because basically your reward is just this little, it's called a bright engram, and it just gives you a random chance at some cosmetics. The biggest issue is that people have been criticizing Bungie for their lack of transparency and communication in the game's future. And so for them to get caught doing something that, of course, no one was really happy to find out about, and for them to communicate, yep, we're getting rid of that system, and then conveniently leave out the other thing that they probably knew people wouldn't be happy about, it doesn't really bode well in that sense. They did actually release, not an open letter, but in their blog post, they mentioned that, yeah, we're very aware of the fact that we need to be more transparent and that, it was a very PR statement, but, it was at least something.
I was going to say, take us right into our next little quick hit here. Because they dropped a big blog post about a bunch of major changes.
Yes, they did. So a lot of these changes actually, so going from their debacle with the XP system, they released a list on their blog update of what they plan to change about Destiny 2. I think a lot of people were skeptical when they started reading this blog post, because normally when you get something like this, it lays out a timeline for the changes that are going to be implemented over the course of time and things that are saying, we want to introduce all these small elements and system changes to make the game more rewarding for their most dedicated player base. And as you scroll through, a lot of the changes are very good, including revamping of how certain loot is acquired, for how you interact with vendors, to making certain vendors that were pretty useless now much more interesting. Xur being one of the biggest points of contention for end game loot. Xur is one of the few vendors that you can get, items that are called exotic items. They're, you know, very rare, unique pieces of gear that you can buy from this, vendor once a week. He'll have a rare selection. And for the most part, he carries very common pieces of these gear that no one really would find valuable. They're changing about the way that he works. They're changing the way that certain vendors work. They're introducing a new type of loot called masterwork weapons, which will give more incentive for people to grind in end game for weapons that they want that are called these masterwork weapons. These are all very positive changes. And then we also learned that at the time of that this blog was being posted, that the changes were going to be implemented the following week, which is maybe the most inspiring part about it, is that there were changes that were identified with people being unhappy with the end game, and that a lot of these changes that have been generally received positively are being introduced, I think at that point it was a little less than a week. They certainly had some missteps when it comes to the XP system mostly, and then obviously ongoing complaints with the end game, but I don't know. I feel very optimistic with the way that they've handled this part of the game, at least.
You're going to be able to drop right back in and get, you know, ensconced in Destiny 2 like you had been?
Yeah, I'm very confident with that, actually. Just from the way they're trying to expand on the end game for grinding for certain weapons and making vendors a little more appealing to interact with. These were all good changes, and they're being implemented with the drop of the DLC alongside it. So you not only do you have the DLC dropping with new content, you also have revamps to existing systems to make the end game a little more appealing. With those two things combined, I don't know. I am not the most seasoned Destiny critic either. Destiny 2 is my first Destiny, so a lot of people are comparing the end game to Destiny 1, and basing their criticisms on their previous experience, which is something I don't have. But based on my experience with how stale the end game has been, basically since you max out all of your characters, this seems like it's going to give me a lot to do. But time will tell, and actually, that time is coming very, very soon. So there's reasons to be positive for the end game.
Well, I'll be looking forward to when you get back into it and seeing if it keeps your interest, because I just bought the regular version of Destiny, so I'm gonna have to decide if I want to buy the DLC. I've kind of dropped off of Destiny 2. I got my money's worth out of it, but very much like what they allude to in their blog post here, like I just kind of ran out of things to do. Wasn't finding compelling reasons to log in, and they seem to be aware of that. So that would be good if they kind of create more reasons to log in, more things to do aside from just knock out stuff and then wait for the weekly reset.
Yeah, agreed.
So last little bit of Destiny 2 news here. We got some cross marketing here. Destiny 2 gets a ghost skill for Amazon's Alexa, which is, it's like, whatever. But there's also, they're selling a ghost version of the Alexa.
Yes.
This is a real product that you can buy.
that is awesome.
Which is, this is not for me, but I actually think this is pretty cool. Because Alexa's got like a pretty sterile look to it. It's just like, it's a cylinder. This one looks pretty neat. You know, it's the ghost from Destiny 2, and it's just an Alexa. So, kind of a cool idea. And, the Alexa skill, apparently, like, you can do various things, when you hook it up to your account. Like, you basically ask it, what's an example here? Trying to see, there was like some quotes they had. You can ask Alexa what's the weather, but it was something like, you know, you can ask it like who's online, or, you know, like you could basically ask it things in the game And that, you know, I don't know that I would use that, but that seems kind of cool, to have some of those options, you know, to know if there are friends on or know if you want to like hop in and group with someone. You know, it's a neat idea. I just wanted to highlight it because I thought it was kind of a unique idea. That I don't know that a ton of people would use, but I feel like if you're a Destiny, you know, hardcore Destiny fan, this is probably pretty neat. And you know, it's like, it's free. It's a free Alexa skill. So hard to complain about a free integration like that.
Yeah, that's cool. I will admit, I misread this as Amazon Alexa gets a Destiny 2 ghost kill. And having never played Destiny, I thought it was like, hey, Alexa, get me a kill or something. Like something that she interacted with the game and managed to kill a player through Alexa. But no, I was very wrong.
Yeah, so one of the things you can like ask Ghost to equip my raid loadout, which seems useful, or you can ask Ghost to tell me who are the Red Legion if you you know, if you want to catch up on your Destiny lore.
Oh my god. Cool.
Are you gonna install this skill on your Alexa?
I wasn't sold until I read the part that says you can ask Alexa to ask Ghost to call for backup. An easy way to interact with your friends and their clan to enhance the social experience of Destiny 2. That's what I needed.
There you go.
Yeah. I'll buy this Ghost and I'll ask Alexa if she can, you know, take my spot on the podcast.
Yeah. There you go.
Let's really see how far we can push this technology.
Yeah, who knows what Ghost can do? It's not just limited to Destiny 2. All right, well, cool. Also, apologies to all the people listening for whom we just undoubtedly set off their Alexas multiple times in that section.
Yeah, sorry about that, guys.
So that does it for our news. Pretty light news week, but still some good discussion. Let's hop into the new releases. You know, I'm surprised games are coming out in December, but as it turns out, they are. So take it away, KD.
Yes, you wouldn't think it, but I just said yes without even thinking. Oh my god, kill me. No, you wouldn't think it, but there's some good stuff coming out. I will admit that I did remove Live 2D VR Girls from the list because that, you know, didn't really, despite the absolutely, and I'm not even exaggerating, there's some incredible software into making these anime girls just look amazing. Like, it is stupid how good these anime girls look in 3D. So Live 2D VR Girls, if you want to check that out. But on to the actual new releases. Getting over it with Bennett Foddy. It was, I'm sure you've heard about. It's the new game from Bennett Foddy, known for the game Quap, which is one of the most impossible games I've ever played. And it's his new game with one of my favorite Steam descriptions. It says, a game I made for a certain kind of person, to hurt them.
Oh.
And it says, like, between 2 and infinite hours of agonizing gameplay, depending. The median time to finish for my playtesters was 5 hours, but the mean was closer to infinity. Lose all your progress, over and over. Feel new types of frustration you didn't know you were capable of. And apparently there is a magical reward that awaits hikers at the top. But yeah, this game actually, if you've seen people playing it, they got it through the Humble Bundle monthly, I believe, is how people got their hands on it early. But it looks incredible. It looks infuriating. I mean, you're in the game, you're moving this naked man sitting inside of a bucket, and you just have a hammer. And you move the hammer with your mouse. And there's actually a lot of depth to physics with this guy. And so you just try to climb up these like rocks, and it's just a stupid, huge level to go through before you get to the very top. And it's very easy to make one small mistake and fall down what took you maybe 2 hours of progress to get through. It just looks infuriating. I mean, I'd like to support this developer, but I probably will never play this game unless I'm like drinking like heavily.
It's been popular Twitch fodder, obviously, because it's, you know, you basically just, you want to wait for when they inevitably mess up. And yeah, some of the drops, you know, when you miss time a jump or something, it's very easy to probably lose an hour or two of progress.
Yeah, it's not for me, man. I already get so mad at like fucking Sonic. I can't play this. I would commit. But yeah, this comes out December 6th. Not sure what the price is. It's tagged as psychological horror on Steam, which is fitting.
That's fantastic.
That's awesome. This next game. So, this is actually quite funny. So, just fresh off of talking about DayZ coming out of Early Access, we've got another Early Access title from Bohemia Interactive releasing December 6th in Early Access. This was shown off at E3. It's called Wildlands. And yeah, it's a big open world sandbox kind of game. At first, it looks a little like Minecraft. You're building, you're getting materials. It's got a unique, like, polygonal art style. But, apparently the real depth of this game comes from the multiplayer and the interactability, if that's a word, all the things you can do, all the built-in game editor that lets you design and share your own levels. And apparently it gets pretty depth because, some of the trailers had just like custom levels being shown off, and it looks like there's a lot of custom stuff you can do if you want to put the time into it. But we'll see. Maybe this game will pick up if some really killer levels come out for it. But yeah, I just find it really interesting that spending all this time on DayZ and they're releasing another game.
It's also interesting just because the game looks so different from DayZ. I mean, it's a complete 180 from what right. DayZ is. It's like the art style is so different. I mean, it basically, you're right, it kind of looks like a little bit more sophisticated Minecraft mm-hmm. kind of art style. And it's like an open world sandbox. Granted, DayZ is open world, but in a very, very different setting. So, yeah, kind of weird to see that juxtaposition.
Yeah, it looks like it definitely looks more, I mean, customizable. I mean, DayZ couldn't really customize much, but it looks like a lot is left open to the, you know, player. So hopefully people pick this up. It does look interesting. I'm sure there are going to be some crazy, you know, possibilities with this. But if you're interested, it comes out December 6th, and there's no price at this time. All right, next up, Tokyo Xanadu EX Plus. Now, yes, this is weeb shit. But this is made by, I feel like I'm just going to be copy-pasting what I said about another game, where it's weeb, but it's made by literally the same developer I talked about in that one game, where I was like, this is weeb, but you should play it because these guys made it. It's a game by Nihon Falcom, which they make some incredible action games. They do some really good music. It's published by Axis Games, which actually published Guilty Gear and BlazBlue, if I'm not mistaken. So, yeah, gameplay-wise, it looks really similar to the new Yeez game. It looks strikingly similar to that. That game was supposed to come out on PC back in September, which it got delayed inevitably because it wasn't ready for PC, and they wanted to completely rework the entire localization of the game because apparently it was just so badly translated. They're getting all the voice actors back and redoing the entire script of the game. It's nuts. So hopefully that delay doesn't happen to this title, because it looks kind of fun where it's not really in like that kind of knights pirates setting. It's in like it reminds me kind of like Persona, where it's high school kids going into some like nightmare realm. But yeah, just looking at the gameplay, it looks fun. We'll see what price it is. The price isn't on the Steam page yet, but this comes out December 8th. And lastly is a game called Gunlock, which is it's an arcade platformer, which is nothing insane. It looks like a fun time waster with some good pixel art and some fun gameplay. So yeah, I mean, definitely look at it if you're looking for something like that it looks like it's going to scratch that kind of itch that Downwell did, something like that. But it kind of looks similar vibes to that. So it's called Gunlock. Hopefully it'll be good. It's on Steam also. I just figured I'd throw it on because, you know, it's difficult to find promising games on the new releases on Steam. So I'm going to put whatever I can. But yeah, that's going to do it for the new releases. New releases, we've got some pretty juicy viewer questions this week.
Yeah. So we've got a few... email viewer questions this week, you can email us at community@kbmod.com if you want to leave us a question to answer. The first one here comes from Trent. He says, there isn't a lot of sport talk on the podcast other than esports, but was wondering what your favorite sports teams were and the best live sports event you've attended, if you've been to one before, of course.
I can't really say I have a good...
Yeah, nothing?
Say, you live in Indianapolis.
I mean, yeah, I feel like I like the Colts because I'm obligated to like the Colts because
that wasn't what I meant. Indy 500.
Oh, I just don't care about racing. I'm sorry, but just like my parents and my family, they try to get me to sit down and watch the Indy 500, all the stuff going on. And I mean, I find it very interesting and it's fun.
Have you been to it before in person?
Yes, yeah, that's right. Yeah, you're right. I've been to quite a few races in person, but yeah,
I was going
to
say in person, racing is kind of like baseball for me. It's like I can go in person, I can enjoy a game, but it's hard to watch on TV. It's like a very different experience in person.
Yeah, but when we're talking about the best live sports events I've been to, I'm definitely going to say football. I mean, I've been to a few football games, not recently, but I mean, I enjoy watching that in person a bit, but I'm not going to, you know, go Cubs. I know I have a lot of friends and I know a lot of people from KBMod in Pittsburgh. So if I don't say Phil Kessel is a god, then I'll just be hunted down. So Phil Kessel, he's incredible. Yeah, the Stanley Cup. It's great. I love hockey.
Okay, what a convincing.
Were you not sure if the Stanley Cup was for hockey? That's what that sentence sounded like.
No, I was being stupid.
Okay.
What a convincing answer. What about you, Ying?
Well, I was born in Ottawa, Ontario, Canada. So I am a fan of the Ottawa Senators, which are a hockey team, in case you don't follow that. And my best sporting event was I had a chance to watch the Ottawa Senators play Game 6 of the playoffs in New York against the New York Rangers. And that was my first time being in a playoff atmosphere and just how excited people were being in a stadium of people that were just losing their minds about how excited they were for this game. It was the only time I've ever experienced that level of energy in a single building. So I would say that was probably the best live sports event, my first playoff game. And I'm an Ottawa Senators fan.
Okay. Yeah, I've been to a lot of sports events. Have a few favorite sports teams. I'm a Dallas Cowboys fan, big Texas Longhorns fan, San Antonio Spurs fan, and I've been to a fair number of games from all those teams. I would say probably the coolest one I've been to, like a lot of college football games are a lot of fun to go to in person. And I was fortunate enough to go to the University of Texas when they were like a national championship contender pretty much every year I was there. And so I think it was 2009 or 2010. When the Longhorns were facing USC in the championship, and we were able to get tickets because we were students, and so they allot a certain number of tickets to students. We were able to, like, me and my friends were all able to get tickets, and we road tripped over to the Rose Bowl, and we ended up losing the game. But that was one of the coolest live sports events I've been to. Just, you know, obviously road tripping with friends, and then the atmosphere of a game like that was pretty awesome when you have like both sides of the stadium like shouting back and forth at each other.
Yeah.
It's pretty wild. So that's probably the most fun one I've been to.
It's always really good when the crowd feels split.
Yeah.
You have that competition between everyone watching in the sidelines.
Yeah, absolutely. Like the rivalry games are so much fun. Because when the crowd is split like that and you have chants going from each side, it's like that atmosphere is electric. Next up we have a question from Mr. Shark Bear via email. He says, howdy y'all, long time listener, first time caller. In the summer, I'll be in Greece for 6 weeks working at an archaeological dig and my bulky PC is staying in the States. Do any of you have any recommendations for cheap, good tablets? All I'm really looking for is something lightweight with a bigger screen for watching videos, streams, reading, and playing simple games. Thanks for the over 300 episodes of memes, overreactions, and food classifications. I don't know if you guys... Yeah, thank you, first of all, for calling in and being with us for a long time, Mr. Shark Bear. I don't know if you guys have any suggestions here, but my default suggestion, honestly, would just be an iPad. Probably like maybe a generation or two old. One of the ones that are like probably $350, $400 at this point. There's a lot of good options for free apps. Obviously, watching streams and stuff works on an iPad really well. Playing simple games, reading, like all that stuff. I mean, I think an iPad works really well for that. And you don't need a super expensive one, unless you, obviously, if you want to spend the extra money and get one of the newer ones, those are nice too. But I'm not that familiar with Android tablets, but I feel like Android tablets are a lot more hit and miss.
Right. I mean, I faced a similar kind of, I don't know if you call it a predicament, but I was doing the same thing earlier. I was just wanting a tablet, not really for like heavy gaming or like a really real powerhouse, but I ended up going with hold on, let me grab it real quick. It's the Samsung Tab S. I'm pretty sure it's like the S or the S2. I'm just gonna look at the model number, but it wasn't at a crazy price. I got mine for like $150, which is pretty good. But I mean, all I've been doing is just something to watch videos on that isn't my phone, my streaming, and reading ebooks. And an occasional game here and there, like pretty much exactly what you're looking for. And it's been doing very well for me so far. It's just fast enough to like excel at, streaming and downloading and everything, but it's not really breaking the bank. So I'd go with this. Let me get that model number real quick.
You said that was about $150.
Yeah. I got it about half a year ago. So let me,
okay,
double check. I'm looking it up right now. Yeah, it was, it looks like, yeah, it was the Tab S 8.4. And that, if I go on to ebay.com, boom, I'm here. I've pasted the model number in. 96, 88, 140, around that price. Yeah, it's a good price, and it's very serviceable for what you're asking for. So if you're looking for Android, I'd recommend that.
Yeah,
you can probably get away with something weaker. But
yeah, a couple more recommendations in chat for the Samsung Tab as well, and I'll echo that. Yeah, another good point is it kind of depends on if you're sort of bought into the Android or iOS ecosystem too.
Mm, yeah,
that probably plays a part in which one you would want to get. So yeah, Samsung Tab. If you're looking for Android or something lower priced. And obviously, if you're in the iOS ecosystem, I think an iPad probably makes a lot of sense. I own an iPad. I've been really happy with it. And they last a long time. That's the one thing that I like with Android tablets. I feel like they don't last as long. Like, just because new stuff comes out that's so much faster, and the older devices really show their age quickly. Where like I had my last iPad for, I think, like 4 years. And I finally upgraded just because I wanted something slightly faster. But it's always good. I was able to hand it down to my parents. So good, okay. Good question. And thanks for the support there. Next question comes from Mike Cantu via email. And he says, Dear KVMod, now that the holiday season is upon us, I again find myself with a rather perplexing problem. Every year, I always insist to my family and friends that the best gift they can give me around Christmas time is their company. Yet, despite my best efforts, I always end up with presents to open, and by extension, I feel the need to reciprocate. This is where my problem lies. On one hand, I like the idea of giving personalized gifts to everyone, where it is obvious how much thought I've put into it. But this is an extremely difficult and time-consuming task. On the other hand, I can very easily fulfill my obligation by reciprocating with something like gift cards, but this feels like such a low-effort solution to the point of being almost meaningless. In light of this, I'd love to know how you all approach the gift-giving process. Where do you stand on this scale between simple reciprocation and extremely personalized gifts? Should monetary value even be considered if the gift is clever and thoughtful? He adds at the end, I'm particularly interested to hear KDZen's thoughts, as it has become quite obvious over his time on the cast that he has some sort of affinity for the personalized style of gift giving.
Okay. Huh.
So, I can't see needs you here, KD. What is your advice?
Let me think. Well, it's tricky because on the one hand, there are things I've done that I've been very proud of as far as like gifts I've given, but especially like at this point in time, I'm thinking about all my family members and I've got, you know, the Samsung Note to keep track of what I'm getting for everybody. But it's, I'm really struggling this year. I've yet to really been hit with some inspiration, but, where do you stand on the scale between? Let me read over the question one more time. Someone else take this. I'll go. Okay. And
I actually think I have an answer for this because I figured out part of
shopping. You strike me as a very thoughtful guy, Ying.
Yeah, and it's true. If you're trying to get a gift that is purely based on, or you're trying to come up with a gift idea that is purely based on its personalization, that's going to be very difficult. So what you can do is you strike the middle ground. Think about what's going on in that person's life. Find a very, it doesn't have to be very special, but something that fits that kind of an occasion, and make sure that with the card you're sending with it, that it denotes that, you know, you're thinking about them in this situation for this thing that they're doing, and that your gift correlates to that. So my example for that is, my parents have recently moved into their dream house. They have a small home on the water now. So what I'm doing is I'm buying them just a small decoration and a bottle of wine as like a housewarming gift, but the card denotes that I'm really happy that you guys have worked so hard to get this dream house that you want. This is a bottle of wine that I want us to share when we go to your home. We can have a housewarming gift. And as an aside, I also bought this piece for you that I think would look very lovely in your home, like, because knowing their preferences. It's nothing fancy. It's a bottle of wine and a piece of house decor, but you're attaching that to a personal aspect of their life. And that's where that gift's going to come into play. So the item itself isn't special, but you're denoting a meaning onto it. That's usually the way I'll try to do gift giving, because you're right. If you try to come up with something that's really personalized, it can be really difficult, and as Ikanti said, very time consuming. So it's trying to strike the middle ground, attaching not a mundane item, but nothing that's too wild or out there that's going to take up a lot of your time, and giving it the meaning based on what's going on in that person's life.
Well, Ying making us all look bad over here.
That's, I'm still kind of struggling over
I'm
here.
I'm touched.
that was awesome. Yeah, I mean,
I'm gonna have to send a thank you letter to your parents. You've raised such a thoughtful son. While you're still thinking, I am actually not good at this. I am not good at like personalized gifts. Probably because I'm not a huge, you know, personalized gift person myself. I'm very much, you know, utilitarian, like get me a gift card or get, you know, don't get me anything at all. Like that's fine. Generally if I want something, I buy it for myself. So I just don't place a huge value on personalized gifts, which I know will probably shock everyone listening. However,
I mean,
the trick here is, you get married to someone who is more creative than you, more thoughtful than you, and takes care of all of it for you because she actually enjoys it. So that is my suggestion, is find a partner who is able to do all of this for you, and then you just sign your name on the card and you get to take advantage of it. There you go.
I mean, so sorry, Katie, before we get back to you, I need to ask this too. As someone who receives gifts, I'm hoping this is common. I hate receiving gifts because if it's like a physical thing, like as you said, if it's not like utilitarian, it's not like a card I can put into my wallet, my first thought is I have to find somewhere for this to exist. Like this has
Ying,
to take
you
up
and
space
I,
somewhere.
You and I are exactly on the same page. We are okay, so on good. The same page you don't even know. Because all these small little gifts, like these little tokens, these little like, you know, $10, $20 tokens, that's like, where am I going to put this thing? I'm so, like, I'm glad that you thought of me, but also I want to throw this away because I'm going to have to find a place for it to live. And so it's like, what is the statute of limitations on gifts like that? Like, how long do you have to keep gifts like that around before you can give them away?
Dude, it depends on who it's from. Like, if it's from a coworker or a friend or something like that, it's probably not going to be around for a year. But if it's from my parents, it has to exist forever.
What about family? Yeah, family. Yeah, you have to keep it around.
I don't know that I could get rid of it, because I see a lot of my my family pretty often, even extended family. And at the back of my head, if I'm holding it, and I have this object in my hand that they gave me, and there's nowhere I can put this that I'm happy with. And I'm standing there either at like the storage locker that I have or like the garbage bin. The only thing that's flashing through my mind is when they visit me in a couple of months and they say, hey, where's the blank that I gave you? And just imagining me squirming in that situation is enough for me to take this item back and put it in a closet somewhere where it has existed for the past, well, since I got it, collecting dust.
Yeah, that look of horror when you gave it away and the one time they ask about it. I know exactly what you mean.
Oh, I'm really glad that there's someone else on the same page here, because it's like, you know, I don't want to, I feel like I'm being ungrateful, but at the same time, it's like, I don't have somewhere for this to exist that I'm happy with. I don't want to put this somewhere.
Yeah, I don't like clutter. And so just adding more clutter to my life, that's the only thing that I don't like about gift-giving holidays. And I think that maybe is why, I feel like that's why as you grow into an adult, like, you know, adults often say, you know, yeah, just like clothes. I love clothes. And I think I can start to see why, because clothes, at least it's like you can do something with it. It goes in your closet. Maybe you wear it, maybe you don't. But like there's never like this obligation to keep it around. It's like if you don't like it, you can generally return it. And if you do like it, then great. It just goes in your closet. Cool. It's put away. Done.
Yeah. And clothes also have like an inherent place where they are stored regardless.
Yeah.
Like having an extra shirt folded up in my closet isn't going to bother me as much as someone buying me a trinket that they bought back. And I was like, I have to display this somewhere, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not exactly a very decorative person. So yeah, things like that, I'm right there with you. It's like you kind of just have to put in a box in the closet and keep it around just in case they ask about it.
Yeah.
All right, well, Katie, you got to give us the real stuff here.
No, I mean, I know I've been getting hyped up as having some incredible answer for this, but I mean, there have been, I know I've been even recently talking about like really thoughtful stuff like the TV, or that time when like because sometimes I just want to switch it up. For example, like my mom's birthday and Mother's Day, like I instead of just getting her chocolate or something, I'll like that stuff I did. I don't know if I talked about the pinata that one time I got for her and just had her mess with the pinata. I put all the chocolate inside the pinata, like little strokes, like ideas like that or something. But when it comes to the actual act of giving gifts, I am terrible. I almost always default to gift cards. All of my IRL friends, they just get Steam cards. That's it. Like, or I'll see like a t-shirt that I think applies to them and I'll pick that up. And part of me is, like, in my opinion, cards I think are just dumb. Like, I just tell someone how I feel instead of getting a card and fueling that business. That's a whole different discussion. But it's just, I'm terrible, especially this time of year. Like I'm really struggling. I'm sorry I can't too. I'm sorry to give you that impression that I know what I'm doing, but I think Ying and Brandon both killed it for you. So
I feel like maybe KD, you have your strokes of genius, but it's inconsistent.
It's very inconsistent. 90% of the time, it's just shameful.
Yeah. The challenge is that if you do give someone a really thoughtful gift, now there's the pressure to perform better like next year. And so it's a never ending cycle of trying to one up yourself. And that's the fear.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause the day after or the year after I did that, I'm like, okay, well, it's going to be just chocolates this time.
Yeah. And then you got your dad a new TV. Like, how are you going to up that next year?
There's no way.
You're setting future dad up for disappointment.
You're setting future dad. No,
yeah, this I should have never got it for him. Yeah.
this is where I think my philosophy still works, though, because the thoughtfulness of your gift isn't dependent on the previous year, because you're ascribing it meaning that has to do with something that's happening in their life at that time or in the past year. And chances are, during that 365-day period, there's going to be something new you can hone in on and ascribe meaning to and attach it to your gift.
Hey, Ying, I think you were used to talk. And you were definitely the best gift giver out of all of us. I can already tell.
I'm hearing this and I'm like, my sister likes Doctor Who. I got her a Doctor Who pop. I got her an Adipose pop. Yay! It's just, who am I?
Yeah, I normally just ask. I ask people what they want for Christmas or for their birthday. And if I don't get a good answer, I default to my wife, who I hope has a better idea than I do.
Yeah, I mean, if you have people in your life that are happy to answer that question truthfully, that is the greatest. Yeah. Takes so much pressure away from you. You know they're going to be happy with it. But alas, we can't always live in that perfect world of gift giving.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Well, those were pretty good answers. Hopefully, I can too. Got some inspiration for the Christmas season here. But we're going to finish up the podcast with we have a continuation of the novelization of the KB Mod screenplay based on the novel pushed by Sapphire, a Choose Your Own Adventure book/anime.
At long last.
KD, I believe it's only right to give you the honors.
Thank you. Thank you. Although we will swap when it's our respective lines.
Okay, I'll try to keep up.
And anyone, if it's not me or Brandon, I'm going to toss it to you, Ying. You'll find.
Oh, okay.
We'll keep everybody involved. Here we go. No time to explain. Brad is level 42. KD is level 58. APL is level 80. Papa Barndor is max level. Quotes marked with an asterisk must be read by in your best Bill Cosby voice. Okay. That's going to be shitty. The KB Mod squad wanders through a thick, mysterious fog deep in the Oregon wilderness.
This is no Gange fog.
Says Papa Barndor.
This is something different.
KD stumbles. Oh, is this it? Am I supposed to?
That's you.
No. Oh, I'm just looking for the asterisk. Okay. I feel loopy. My brain feels like Jell-O pudding pops. Oh my god. Suddenly, echoing through the shadows and fog comes a dark whisper. I came downstairs and my wife's face was split. Oh my god. That was so bad. I'm sorry.
Bill Cosby.
I can't do it. Clean down, just my wife's face was split. I can't do it, dude. It's so shitty. All right. Katie's eyes begin to droop. I'm dizzy.
Sorry, I couldn't tell who. I couldn't tell which one was who. Okay.
Go for it.
Papa Barndor slaps him hard. No, KD, don't fall asleep. I feel like something terrible will happen if we fall asleep.
The darkness whispers again. You take this one, Dean.
I'm supposed to do it. Okay.
You do it.
Jell-O pudding pops? Oh, pops. Pudding pops. Rudy.
Oh, my God. In a flash of light, the squad stumbles out of the trees into a clearing. In the distance, they see a house, Bill Cosby's house. How did we get here? Exclaims KD. We were in the Oregon wilderness a minute ago. It's as if our choices don't matter. Is this a Telltale game? Without knowing how or why, the KB Mod squad finds themselves seated on a fur-covered couch inside the ominous house they just saw.
This isn't right. Show yourself,
shouts Papa Barndor. Floorboards creak as out of the shadows a team appears. It's the entire Telltale Games development team.
Oh my god.
In unison, they chuckle. What do you have to say now, Apple Fisherman? APL stands erect and faces them.
They didn't know. I'm the one who was shouting it. Let them go. Let them get out of it.
Evil smiles spread over collective faces as they reply,
You've been talking trash for far too long now. We lured you to Bill Cosby's house so you could really experience a meaningless choice. Listen, Appleman, here it is. If you don't admit that Minecraft story mode is great, Brad will permanently be banished to the don't worry about it couch.
Oh my god. App fishy men. Oh my god. Tugs at his collar and sweats profusely. He looks nervously from his sworn enemies and their impossible ultimatum to a terrified Brad holding a questionable-looking drink. Does Appleman A, admit the impossible and save Brad from the horrors of Bill Cosby's house? Apple guy drops 20 levels. B, hold his ground and leave Brad to his fate, which Brad drops to level 1. C, use a vape stone, 30% chance of success. Or D, gamble that Yingity Yang will arrive to save the day in a thingity thong. 10% chance of success. That's quite a gamble.
Did he ascribe me a 10% chance? I think that's very accurate, because I think if I had to do anything in a thingity thong, I would be, I'd be very self-aware and self-conscious, and I think my ability to do anything would be greatly hindered.
You're right. Yeah, that's... Let me think. This is a tough choice.
Wow. That is, That one took a little bit of a turn I wasn't expecting.
Yeah, I think we're on our way to Pittsburgh, or... No, we're going into the Oregon wilderness, and
we don't even know. We don't even know, because the Telltale team took us off track.
Oh, that's right.
The one question I have is that it says, use a vape stone, 30% chance of success, or I show up in a thingity thong and have a 10% chance of success. What's the penalty for failure?
Yeah.
What are we risking here with this 30 and 10% chance?
You just appear in nothing, or normally clothed?
I think it's if we, like, Brad gets banished. If we
oh shit.
Like, the alternative is Brad gets banished.
Well, yeah, he gets dropped.
But option B says, so if Scott does nothing, then Brad drops to level 1. So is banishing that he drops to level 1?
I guess, yeah.
So in that case, there'd be no point in choosing option B.
So here's the thing. If we want to gamble a little bit, we could go C or D. But A, if Scott could save Brad and he drops 20 levels, but Scott's already level 80.
Yeah.
So yeah, like, he would only drop down to level 60.
But we'd lose our carry.
No, I'm your carry. I'm max level.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
That's what I mean. So, like, Brandon, you and I were on the same thinking here. You can just take option A, accept the penalty, and it would mitigate all of the risk from the other three options.
And I feel like the thing is, I feel like Scott would almost certainly sacrifice some levels to save Brad.
That's true. Yeah,
I don't think Scott would be comfortable leaving it to a chance with a vape stone or Ying in a thong.
Yeah.
Because the chances of success are too low. So I think Scott would take the level drop.
Yeah, and the thing is too, with Brad, you're risking him dropping 41 levels. He's level 42.
Yeah.
With Scott, you could just take the level 20 penalty straight up. And
that's true.
That's less than half of the penalty.
Yeah. I think we gotta go option A. We got it. Scott has to sacrifice a little bit. But Brad is already our lowest level character, so like we have to keep him, you know, if we're gonna go through higher level stuff, like we gotta keep him at least competitive.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. I think it's unanimous.
I think that's the team choice.
All right, yeah, so we're gonna go with option A. Although I don't even know where we're potentially going now. We're just in Bill Cosby's house with the whole Telltale team. Like what
kind of partnership is that? How did Bill Cosby get in cahoots with the Telltale? The fuck?
I don't know, man. There are some weird business relationships there.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Love Muffin, for continuing the KB Mod screenplay based on the novel Pushed by Sapphire, Choose Your Own Adventure book/anime. And we will look forward to the next continuation. And we're almost done with the cast, but we have this week a new iTunes podcast review.
Oh my god.
My god.
How long has it been?
It's been a little while. It is.
I may be wrong, but I think this may be the first iTunes podcast review of the week that has been featured since I've been on.
Really?
Wow. Okay.
Well, it's been a little while. I gotta say, iTunes has been going through some changes. It looks bleak out there. So I'm glad someone made it through the entire process and hit submit and apparently made it past the iTunes review filter. So, if you want to leave an iTunes podcast review, you can go to iTunes, on your phone if you have an iPhone or your PC or somewhere. Go to the podcast section, search KB Mod. You'll find it, you click on it, and then write us a review. The only rule is you gotta leave us 5 stars, because that's what we deserve, and none of the other ratings are important. So leave us 5 stars. Even if you hate the cast, let us know in the text, the body of your review. Right? Just leave, the 5 stars are there. You can let us know how bad we are, how good we are, or, you know, what you ate for lunch in the body of that review. And we might feature you on the cast. So this week, we have a review from ThoughtSlayer 2002,
which sounds like
an online handle from 2002. title of the review is "It Could Be Better." 5 stars, okay. Of course. He says, "Overall, it's a great podcast. I've been a fan for many years now, and will definitely continue listening. But I do have one complaint." While Woody and Kyle are great hosts, I'm a bit disappointed that they kicked Wings of Redemption from the podcast. Hopefully you guys can bring him back someday. Keep up the good work.
Yeah, we should get him on. He seems like a really nice guy, you know?
Yeah. It was down a shame we had to get rid of him. But, you know, people go in different directions, you know, content changes. It's, you know, he's found a home elsewhere.
Yeah, it's better to cherish what you had than regret what you don't have anymore.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. Exactly. Better to have loved and lost than to have never have loved at all.
Yeah, before you get kicked from the podcast.
Before you get kicked from a podcast. That's a
please.
For anyone cancel. Who doesn't get the reference, that's a vintage meme. That's like a vintage 2012, 2013 age. Meme. So it's got some nice age to it, and, you know, it's like a fine wine or a nice piece of cheese.
There are some great Wings tweets or references. I broke my controller.
Well, we do appreciate every now and then, you know, someone takes us back to the olden days in these reviews. So look forward to the next person reviewing who can mistake us for a different podcast. That's going to do it for episode 303. Thank you, everyone, for coming out and joining us this week. If you'd like to follow KB Mod, you can do that on kbmod.com and find everywhere we are there. But if you want slightly more direction than that, we're most active on Twitter, at kbmodgaming, facebook.com/kbmod. We have a Discord, kbmod.com/discord, all sorts of things. Go to the website and you can find all of that. If you'd like to follow me, I'm on Twitter, at Volition. That's V-O-L-1. V-I-O-N. KD is at KDZen underscore.
Uh-huh.
Underscore. On Twitch and Twitter and other social medias. And Ying is at Yingity Yang. Two Y's, right? Yingity.
That's right.
Yang. On Twitch, Twitter, and everywhere else you might find a podcast host. And that's going to do it for us. So we will be back next week with episode 304. Until then, thanks for listening.
Yatta!